would you like to become a millionaire? Brian Kent will tell us how. He is a senior advisor, investor, keynote speaker, and strategic advisor specializing in relationship management, helping corporate managers, executives, and entrepreneurs elevate standards and establish accountability goals for scalable growth. And he has a big dream to create more millionaires in this world that will impact more people to become millionaires, which is so amazing. So that's why he'll tell us all about how you too can become a millionaire. So Brian, how can any entrepreneur become a millionaire?
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show today, Lily. And really the start of that is somebody has to have the mic, Ryan. The right mindset. A lot of people talk about it. A lot of people try to plan, but they never put anything into action. And so what we try to do is work on the action part of it, right? So what we've done with the Alchemist Growth and Income Fund is we're actually trying to personally develop 100 millionaires, either through business operations or through real estate, and then want those 100 individuals to actually take that as a mission to keep our mission and vision going, to be a mentor and help grow 100 millionaires. And so that's really what we're trying to do. We're not trying to say do it with single family housing or do it with ATM machines. We really focus on process and relationship and doing the training.
Thank you. So what's the blueprint for any entrepreneur to get started? To, let's say if they're already doing 100K, how can they go from 100K to $1 million in, I don't know, what a time frame is it feasible to do it in as well?
Ooh, that's a loaded question. I mean, you could do one good business deal or one real estate deal and be a millionaire, depending on what you find as an opportunity and who you decide to team with. The way we've done it is we offer a 52 weeks of wealth class for free every Saturday to go through business principles, books to read, and all those things for people to actually understand what it means to move to a wealth mindset. And then we work with individuals, male, female, doesn't matter, nationality, that want to actually engage. And we put them with teammates, partners, we put them with lawyers, and we kind of put people around them to help coach them as a staff. And then if it's a business or a real estate transaction, we try to align them with where the funding comes from, which is why we started the Alchemist Growth and Income Fund, because we realized we had the coaching, we had the mentorship, we were putting them with the right lawyers, accountants, et cetera. But we realized that one of the places we were coming up short as a team was we didn't have a funding stream where we could help them by being the bank. So therefore, we're trying to put the entire package now through the training, through the action, through the coaching and the funding, which accelerates the opportunity for individuals.
Wow. Tell us more about why are you doing this? Why are you motivated to do this?
Well, I've been in the business industry for 40 years. I've bought and sold several companies. I've been the vice president of a $450 million division. And a couple of years ago, I decided that, I had done all of the spreadsheets and Wall Street stuff I wanted to do, and it was time for me to become a coach and a consultant. And I teamed up with a partner. His name is Galter. And Walter with a GU, he's a Portuguese descendant, and he had a mission statement where he was broke 10 years ago and he wanted to help people not have that mindset. And when he told me the mindset that he was trying to personally develop 100 millionaires, I was like, I can get behind that dream with you because that is helping everyone be better. And if you help everyone be better, hopefully things turn out okay. I'm going to say money solves all problems, but it helps with housing, clothing, donations, charity, all the things that are related to funding, if you have that mindset of giving.
Thank you. Now, let's take a business that has already generated millions of dollars, but it has somehow taken a downturn during the pandemic. What would you have them do to rebuild their credit, first of all? Imagine that they have defaulted on a lot of loans.
The rebuilding credit is a very deliberate action. You have to actually work. Well, you'd have to get your credit report and you actually have to look at which one of the reporting agencies and how they're reporting against your credit. So you can start working on each negative event in your credit report one at a time. But now when you talk about the pandemic or rebuilding or plateauing, I wrote a book 2 years ago called The R Factor, Scaling Your Business Through Relationship Management. Part of that where I personally work with companies that are, I'd say, plateaued. I go in and meet with the executive team of the company, and the goal is to identify where they've stovepiped their processes. They have the wrong people in the wrong seat. Matter of fact, the chapter is called Right Butts in the Right Seat. And it's literally, as companies change, a lot of times companies do not change the way they have their people organized. They just leave the people in the same seat. If you're a tech company, technology changes. So therefore, if you're not updating the task of the individuals, now you have people that maybe are undereducated, undertrained. And as a company, if you're not tracking that, you can't get people ready to help you get out of the slump that you're in.
Thank you. Imagine a company knows what they need to do. They just don't have the funds to do it, and they don't have good credit to do it. Let's say they know what to implement. They don't have like a sales team to help them implement the plan that they have for marketing and for sales. What would you have them do to become a millionaire?
That's exactly what I coach, right? You don't need a huge sales team. You don't need a huge marketing team to start the turnaround. We look at who are you doing work for today, and who is in the same type market that could use your service or product? And what relationship do you have with those people? Or what do you have to do to develop a relationship? You can't eat the whole marketing world. It's too big. So you have to start with people you can look in touch, look, feel in touch, right? So if I know that I have a company that's close by me that I can, or in my local town that I can reach out to through either social events, you know, professional events, whatever it is, to where I can start meeting people in that company and building a relationship, we can figure out ways to do a strategy to do for that growth. And we have to specifically pick those pieces where we call them, when I box them, I say box 1, 2, 3, 4, right? Box 1 is current customer, current business. Can we expand in the current business, maybe in another department, right? Box 2, new customer, same business. So it's now we're talking to them from a point of we know we have a history and a track record of good delivery. Then when you get into 3 and 4, it's same customer, new product. And then 4 is new customer, new product. What I find with a lot of sales teams or companies trying to recover, they're trying to hit what I call a grand slam or a home run. And they're down in box 4, which has the lowest probability of win or the lowest probability of success. You got to go back up and what I say, hit some singles, and doubles and stay in 1 and 2 to where you have relationships and you have past performance. So now you don't need as big of an advertising campaign or as robust of a sales team, because now you're literally building on top of people that can believe you and can pull a track record for you.
Thank you. What are the 10 commandments one should live by to become a millionaire?
First of all, honesty, integrity, transparency are the first three. And the reason I use those as the first three of the 10 is going to be, you're going to get audited. You're going to have taxes to pay. You're going to have legal regulatory things you have to follow the rules for. And if you ever get caught, even if it's accidentally because you just didn't know, it's way easier for a regulatory agency for you to say, I didn't know that. Is there a small fine? Can I get a waiver for the first penalty or whatever? Because what you don't need is to get mired down in a legal process or a legal lawsuit or something to where now your business is spending more money trying to keep its doors open from the regulatory oversight than it would be if you just said, hey, I didn't know that. Let's fix that. So honesty, integrity, and transparency you have to have. The next thing is about your people. You have to understand your people. You have to understand the way they think. You have to understand kind of where they're headed in life or where you want the company to go using those people. So if you look at your people, I'll say that's the next step, right? The training they need, their vision. There's a great book called The Dream Manager, and that company went out and actually asked every one of their employees, what's your dream? What do you want to be in life? And the company actually focused on helping them to achieve their first dream, whether it was speaking another language, whether it was buying a home, saving money for a rainy day, whatever it was. And so therefore they focused on the three people. The turnover in the company dropped drastically. The quality of life in the company went up drastically, and the revenues for the company started climbing rapidly. So the first part's about the corporation, the second part's about the people, and then the third thing is processes. Are your processes repeatable? If you find a better way to do something, do you have a process for people to provide recommendations to make us leaner? Because another thing I see in companies is they don't keep up with the times, so to speak. They don't keep up with the technology, or they don't ever go back and evaluate their process for ways to be leaner, which means you can be more efficient potentially and make more profit from taking steps out or taking regulatory issues out.
Thank you. For companies that have taken a bad turn during the pandemic, how can they start rebuilding their reputation in cases where they were unable to keep their word and they kind of were publicly shamed for it, let's say?
Go back to my first three. Be honest, right? And with integrity. You have suppliers that were going through things during the pandemic that if you explain to them and you actually go to them, say, hey, we worked together well before. Hopefully we didn't burn a bridge. We couldn't fulfill our end for what you needed. We're trying to rebuild. We've overcome those issues now. We have the cash we need, or we can borrow the cash we need, or we're ready to re-engage for the product. Because the key is going to be for any company to do a turnaround. They have to get their current or previous customers to believe in them again. Because if they don't, you can't go to the next level. Because the first thing's going to happen when you try to get a new customer is they're going to say, give me a reference, or who else are you working for? So it's going to come from people you worked for before, people you're currently working for, and where they can do that thing if checked upon. Yeah, they did a great job for me. We enjoyed working with them. Well, they had a little hiccup during the pandemic, but they've overcome that now, and they're really coming back strong. You know, and you want to have that open dialogue and relationship with your customers and vendors. So therefore, if somebody does ask them a question about you, you get that endorsement. Because you know, Lily, a lot of business is killed at the bar when somebody looks over at you and says, Lily, what do you know about company A? You're going, I heard they had a bunch of losers over there and they couldn't figure out how to pay their bills. Conversation's over and you were never part of it. So it's key to have that relationship with your customers and vendors. So when they're asked that question, they give you a good.
Thank you. What's the best way to activate the R factor in your life, the relationships?
Well, I think all of life is a relationship, right? Everything we do, it's whether it's personal, professional, you know, what's your image? You know, how do you want people to think about you? When I wrote the R factor, it was really, I called it the 360 degrees of relationships within the company. And then we also wanted to talk about our customers and vendors. And the reason we did that for the R factor is we had to understand across departments in the company where we were having communication failures. And I see that time and time again where finance is not talking to operations. And as you were talking about earlier, marketing is out there selling as fast as they can sell, but now the company can't deliver what the guy has sold because he's embellished maybe the capability. And some operations guy has to figure out how to broach the problem. Well, we can't really do that for that price, but we can do that if we do this, you know? So you have to have a communications capability across the team where you can have some candor and good hard conversations in the company to make sure the relationships in the company are strong. And therefore we don't have, you know, I'll say outside the family people, we have a face that we all agree that that's the way we need to be. And that's how we're going to deliver. And that's the persona we want to go forward to be the best company we can be.
Thank you. If a company is transitioning from offering not lower priced products, but you can say averagely priced products to something super high ticket, what would you have them do to attract this new caliber of potential clients that will happily pay tens of thousands of dollars for something they truly desire?
Well, so you have, you know, the bell curve on products, right? You have your early adopters, your adopters, and then your laggards. If you look at those folks, you have to, as you embrace any new product or technology to the market, you've got to do, one of two things. One, if it's an equivalent or maybe just a little better, can we give somebody a better price, you know, as a loss leader or something to get into the market? If it's a brand new technology, what is it replacing? Because a lot of businesses can't keep stacking cost on top of cost, you know, because that means their costs are going up and their revenue may not be. It may be kind of flat or, you know, at a standard line. So therefore, if you're bringing a new technology in, as a salesperson or as operator or an entrepreneur, you need to be able to explain to the customer or to the person you're trying to convince to buy in your negotiation, I'm better, or this product is better than X. This is where it's either saves you money or saves you time, and time is money. So, but you have to have that story. A lot of times you'll see a sales brochure and it just says, hey, next generation tech, or it says next generation this, or 100% improvement from the current capability. If you can't explain that to an operations person or to a person that actually controls the purse strings, you may not even be able to get the meeting unless you can have an honest conversation, because they want to know how you're going to make them better, stronger, faster, or cheaper. And if you can't answer those kind of questions, then you're really not in the game. You're just having meetings.
Thank you. I've always wondered about the capability of Hermes Birkin bags to sell for like $30,000 to $250,000. And I'm looking at that and I still don't get it. Like, what makes people buy those kind of bags at such extortionate prices, where you can buy something similar for like a fraction of the price? What would you say needs to happen in the communication for you to be able to become a millionaire by selling super high ticket items that other people are selling at a fraction of the price?
So, anything that's considered a high value, you know, and I don't even want to get into the different levels like you're talking about of purses, because you can have a purse from $50, like you said, to $100,000 or $200,000. If you're going to be selling, you know, the Porsche or the Ferrari or the Aston Martin or whatever it is of whatever product you've got, you have to figure out what the demographic is. What's the avatar, as some people say in marketing? You have to build the avatar to shrink the 7 billion people of the globe down to the piece that you can actually address. And a lot of times, as I'm sitting through pitches with new companies or sitting through operational briefs, I see this, oh, this is a $6 billion market. I said, yeah, but you can't affect a $6 billion market. Have you done the homework to figure out where you can affect the market with our product and our capability? So if you're going to sell that $200,000 bag, you need to know it ain't going to be from people that have houses that are 50,000 pound houses, right? It's going to come from people that are much wealthier or are tied to some type of income stream to be able to afford that as a disposable income item. And if you don't have that kind of research, then you're going to spend a lot of time showing, but not a whole lot of time selling.
Thank you. So what would you say needs to happen in the communication when you are trying to sell a super high ticket product or service to a super high end market so you can become a millionaire through that?
The relationship. I mean, people that buy, I mean, that's why wealthier, high net worth people have personal shoppers. They have people that give them recommendations. And those people are not just somebody they hire off the street. Most of those personal shoppers to high net worth people are those people that are personal valets, have a social network, and the wealthier people, the high net worth people, have a network so that when they want something, they can call their friend just like an average person does. And they say, hey, do you know a maid service I can use? Do you know a personal shopper I can use? So that relationship, if you're that person in that trench that's actually supporting high net worth people, your face and your performance is 100% of your success, because people that are high net worth individuals don't have time to rinse and repeat three times. They want to hire somebody right the first time, and they tend to fire quickly too. If you're not performing, they'll let you go quick. So therefore your reputation is, well, oh, Ms. Smith fired you. What'd they fire you for? Right. So it is a word of mouth. When you get into that high net worth group, it is based on the reputation of the individual. And one of the things that I always say is I'm talking and discussing with CEOs about maybe taking their company out of a plateau. What does your company think of you? Because if the company's lost faith in you as the leader, it may be harder to turn the company around than just fixing a few processes. So high net worth individuals, I think it's 100% relation and relationship management. For the people that are in the market to deliver services to them.
Thank you. What seems to be the easiest way to become a millionaire? I'm sure that you have a few different paths that potential millionaires can take. And in your opinion, what has seem to be the easiest path to get there?
Well, some people would say it's Bitcoin or the stock market, right? Well, I'm not going to say either one of those is the most direct way. I mean, you can use both of those investment strategies with a strategy and grow. Real estate seems to be, for me, has been pretty standard where I can actually follow a model. The model is the same for a small house as is a big house as it is multifamily. Because I can focus on the way the taxes are there, the depreciation, I can use the tax codes and all that to make a model that I can follow no matter where I go in the world. So real estate and then businesses. A lot of people are ready to sell their business or they want to merge with another business. So there's a lot of businesses out there and there's financing out there, creative finance in some cases, where you could maybe buy into a business, a $10 million or $20 million business for very little down, and have millions of dollars worth of equity as soon as you sign and close. Or you find two businesses where you can put them together and they're better together than they are apart. And you can get rid of some of the underlying costs in the two businesses. And next thing you know, there's $1 million worth of equity pretty quickly. I mean, that's what large corporations do. They buy businesses and they integrate them into their systems so they can cut away the things they don't need to be duplicative. And next thing you know, they have several $1 million worth of equity in the buy.
Thank you. What's the most, the easiest specific way that a coach could become a millionaire coach in the shortest time possible?
Oof, a millionaire coach. So the thing about being a coach is most coaching opportunities are you're an army of one. So the easiest way for coaching opportunities is one, actually work with high net worth individuals where you can move up your pay for you and your team. Or you have to come up with a methodology to repeat what you're training. So therefore, you can then continue to be a coach, but then you can have seminars or training to train other people your methodology where you can have a royalty or franchise or some type of second or third stream of income from your knowledge. Those are really, in my mind, the only two ways to do it unless you're a great coach and you make enough to go invest in some real estate and now you're a millionaire. So, but if you want to do it as a coach, you have to build a coaching strategy that can scale. And most coaches use their coaching business as a lifestyle company instead of a growth company. And they're happy to make the $500 to $1 million a year in gross revenue because they don't want 100 people working for them. But if you're trying to scale it, you know, YouTube, coaching classes, literature, methodologies, all those things where you can be the name on it as it's being sold as part of your coaching methodology.
Thank you. What are the best ways for more entrepreneurs to close more sales, aside from what you mentioned earlier?
You have to have a relationship with your buyer that they trust you. And the more they trust you, the more they buy. Again, back to the relationship. So there's a saying, you know, especially here in the U.S., you know, our enemies don't buy from us. It's only acquaintances and friends that buy from us. People that don't like us or don't want to best work with us are not going to buy. So therefore, there's already an inherent string or thread there that there's a relationship that either they like our product or they like us. And to close more deals, you would enhance that thread with each one of your customers to turn more opportunity.
Thank you. What would you say, let's say if you were to speak at an event and you had a similarly qualified person who speaks at an event, what would you say makes the difference between, let's say, someone hiring you and someone hiring another person that has like similarly similar qualifications? What would you say someone would need to have? Is it something in their energy? Is it something in their emotional intelligence? Is it something around their way of managing their operations? What would they have to transmit when they are speaking to people so that people would feel, oh my God, I have to work with Brian?
I think one of the things, especially if you watched any of the recordings of me speaking, it's I try to make sure I understand the audience that we're talking about. And then I try to include those nuggets or those themes that I think would resonate with those individuals. So as I'm tying those things together, it says, what is it? There's a facts tell and story sell. So what's our story, right? To get to that level, if I'm going to be talking. So I should have a story. When I was just in Greece speaking in the fall, one of the things I talked about was basically cultural awareness and technological adoption as two areas specifically in international businesses that a lot of companies don't really pay attention to till they've kind of got themselves stuck. Because cultural awareness is just, you and I probably, we both speak English, but I'm sure you use words in Europe that I don't use in the U.S. and I use words in the U.S. that you don't use in Europe. Well, when we have, if you and I are working on a project, I may be saying something that doesn't resonate with you or doesn't mean the same thing to you. So as a manager, I have to make sure that cultural intelligence and that you know, cultural awareness is centered up front, right? I mean, some people say it might be babysitting where I say, Lily, I need you to do the following. And you go, yes. I said, can you tell me what I just told you? I've found when I've worked with, you know, folks that aren't from where I'm from, I want to do that sometimes just to make sure we're communicating, because sometimes we may think we're communicating, but we're not. And so that's number one. I look at ways that we're going to communicate, and I look for analogies that I think would resonate, right? And then the second thing is technology adoption. Just because I can do it in London or just because I can do it in Stuttgart doesn't mean I can do it in Manila or I can do it in Malaysia. We could have a bandwidth issue. We could have a generator processing issue. We could have filters from the government and different governments that are filtering documentation or things from us where I think I'm sending you something, but the country that is blocking it, maybe you can't have that software or that app in their country. So we have to have a technology adoption understanding too, as we're talking with people from different orientation, different races, and different parts of the world.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can find you.
Yep. So they can find me at www.brianlkent.com. And then I'm also on LinkedIn at Brian L. Kent. And then, of course, that's PhD and then NACD, National Association of Corporate Directors. But so LinkedIn, and then on Facebook is Brian Kent. So
thank you. Tell us also about your property projects that you currently have, and how could someone become a millionaire over the long term with some of those property projects?
Absolutely. So we have opened up a fund to help our aspiring millionaires or to help us put larger deals together. And the first opportunity we've got is we'll call them a note so we can put them against these projects. If you only want to tie your funding up for 6 months, it's at 7%. For a year, it's at 9%. And if we can use it for 2 years, we're actually paying you 12% a year. So if you're wanting a stable cash flow, we have a product like that. And then if you go to, we will also, as deals come available, we will have ones with equity. There might be opportunities for a 12 or 15% return in an interest or a dividend check, as well as an equity play. And as I mentioned to you earlier, you start messing with some equity plays and there might be a million, you might be a millionaire just as soon as we close, depending on how much equity is in the deal. And so you find opportunities for properties where there might be $1 million or $2 million of equity at closing. So if the project's large enough. So if you're one of the equity owners for maybe a couple hundred thousand dollars, now you've turned that couple hundred thousand dollars or $50,000 into a large equity position on a deal. So agif.com is where our fund is at. And then I'm at brianlkent.com.
Thank you. Tell us also three short case studies of entrepreneurs you've worked with who have managed to improve their financial situation by collaborating with you.
Absolutely. So I've consulted for several companies, small and large, helped one lady turn her company from about $500,000 to where she was doing, I think last time I was with her, about $16 million a year in revenue. And we did that through building the foundation. I call it blocking and tackling. You know, you have to do the basics or go back to the basics. And I start with kind of where we are and where they want to go. And we build a strategy to kind of get them there. And then we start looking at what I say singles and doubles to build the foundation for reputation and then start swinging for some of the home runs, which will really have about higher ROI. So that young lady, successful. Now she's doing some international consulting and still runs her company. Another opportunity I had was where I worked with an individual and we, had a new technology. We knew it was going to be something that we thought we could sell. And we actually got it productized. And we worked with the U.S. government then to find multiple locations for our certification and also to get early adopter buy-in. That worked out really well. That turned into another multi-million dollar opportunity. And then for me, I've had several opportunities where I've invested in real estate and, you know, bought in at a good price. We've did the renovations. We've got it rented up, you know, basic block and tackling. 3 to 5 years later, walk away with a 7 or 8 digit return.
Thank you. Stay tuned for the next episode.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.